Welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, 91.9 FM Hood River, and 100.7 FM in Corvallis. We're Northwest Vets for Peace, and here with Bill and John.
Good morning.
And good today, morning. We're going to Talk Nation Radio has a great interview with a kid named Jeff Hanks. He's not a kid. He's a soldier who refused to be redeployed to Afghanistan. He wanted to have medical care, and he just wasn't getting it. And it's 30 minutes, and it's really apropos for what's going on right now. So we're going to start that in just a little bit. But I have a couple of announcements I want to talk for a second. And Dan Handelman and the Iraqi Affinity Group, the Gulf War 20 years later, Visibility Action, marking 20 years of U.S. war on Iraq. And it's going to be Friday, January 14th at 4:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. at Southwest 3rd and Madison. And they're going to sidewalk march over the Hawthorne Bridge. So, and if you have any questions about it, you can call Peace and Justice Works Iraqi Affinity Group, and their phone number is 503-236-3065. And their flyer is just amazing. They start with a picture of 1991, and then they have a picture of 98 and 2004 and 2010. And so that would be a 20 years would be a good one to go to. Also, on a call for love and understanding, responding to violence with unity. Rally in solidarity with Muslims in Portland. And it's going to be at Pioneer Square in Portland on Sunday, December 19th, from 2 to 3 p.m. And the Salman al-Farisi Islamic Center and the Muslim community of Corvallis, along with the people of Corvallis and other cities, will hold a peace solidarity rally at the Pioneer Square on Sunday, December 19th at 2 p.m. So that's going to really, really be nice. And they don't have a phone number here to call, but I'll leave this out on the front desk if anybody would call in about it. It's a rally in solidarity with Muslims in Portland. So before we start, it was military colleges, sexual assaults on the rise. And we've talked about that a lot, our women in the military. And report sexual assaults in the three U.S. military academies rose 64% in the 2009-2010 academic year, according to the Defense Department. And a total of 41 sexual assaults involving students were reported to authorities at West Point, the Naval Academy, and the Air Force Academy. And they're having this to go through this and look at it. It's just horrible. The Pentagon estimates that fewer than 10% of sexual assaults at these academies are ever reported. Less than 10%. So that's not very good. Today, I went into the Oregonian. I forgot to bring it in for the body count in Iraq and Afghanistan. Of course, only Americans account. But I went through, and 142 Oregonians have some connection to Oregon or from southern Washington, 142 folks have died in Afghanistan, in Iraq, from our little area. And what's really sad about this, and we'll talk a little bit after we listen to this CD, but the suicides. Not only are these folks going over there and being killed and wounded, they're coming home and they're being killed at their own hands with suicides. So 142 of our friends and family have died in these silly wars. And there's a report out. It's called Self-Inflicted Deaths Among Women with U.S. Military Service. It's called A Hidden Epidemic. And women veterans are three times higher to commit suicide. And they will do it with a gun, where that's not their first choice of a way to commit suicide. But veteran women will use gun to commit suicide. And they have a breakdown. If you want to see that, you can go to it's in this month's. It's called Psychiatric Services. You can go to their website, and it's ps.psychiatryonline.org, and you can go in there and you look for it's called Self-Inflicted Deaths Among Women with U.S. Military Service: A Hidden Epidemic. And I want to give you some places that if you're a veteran and you're having trouble, if you're depressed and really having a lot of trouble, you need to go and you need to get help. Because I know I went through this myself back in the early 70s, and I still have a lot of problems with it. And there's a couple really good places that I have. And one is the Returning Veterans Project. And we talked to them last month. Remember, Bill?
Yes, we did.
And you can go on their website, or you can call them, and their number is 503-933-4996. Or you can go on their webpage, and it's returningveterans.org. And they have a you go in there, and you hit on this thing, and it'll say, if you need a counselor, and you hit that, and it'll come up, and you put in some information. They're very, very secretive. They won't put your name out. They're really good people, and they will help you get a counselor. If you're an active duty or you're a veteran and you need help, you can go to these folks. They'll help you.
They deal with family problems that
family
are brought on by
too.
This trauma of war.
Yeah. And also there's the Vet Center out at 8383 Northeast Sandy Boulevard, and their phone number is 503-273-5370. So you can also call those folks, and they'll help you. I went for counseling out there for years and years and years, and they're very, very good. And I found another one that was really interesting. It's called Central Oregon Veterans Outreach, and they're over in Bend, Oregon. And it's COVO in Bend, Oregon, and they have this wonderful setup over there.
Yeah, you've mentioned that before.
They are just amazing. They have great counselors. It's just a great place, and they'll really help you. So our brothers and sisters over in the Bend area, the numbers you can call for those folks is 541-617-8777 or 541-504-8715. And those folks are just, you can also go on the internet and just put in Central Oregon Veterans Outreach, and their web page will come up, and they'll see how much great things that they have. And there's always the Veterans Administration Suicide Hotline. You can always get a hold of the VA, and their number is 1-800-273-8255. And I'll put this out on the front desk if I went too fast and folks didn't hear all those numbers. But looking at this, it's pretty even. There's a lot of civilian people working with veterans, and plus the Veterans Administration itself. But there's a lot of good people out there that will help you. If you're having trouble, if your family's having trouble after coming back from these stupid wars, you can get help. And there's no sense in going through life, you know, having a lot of trouble. But you can do that. Tammy, we're going to go ahead and start this. It's Jeff Hanks. It's Talk Nation Radio interview, and Jeff Hanks, a soldier who refused to be redeploy to Afghanistan without first getting medical care. And so it's 30 minutes long, and after it's over, we're going to talk a little more, and I'll give these numbers out again. And so, Tammy, you want to go ahead and start the CD for us? Tammy's back.
Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith.
The campaign is aiming to stop the redeployment of traumatized troops.
I do need some help. If I see a piece of trash, a bag that shouldn't be there, that looks out of place, you know, the first thing that pops in my mind is IED or something like that.
Our guest is U.S. Army infantryman Jeff Hanks. He sought medical help at his military base for symptoms of combat stress, but redeployment to Afghanistan was number one on the military's agenda anyway. We also spoke with Sarah Lazar, the reporter who told Jeff Hanks' story on truthout.org. Jeff Hanks is now AWOL, and the group Iraq Veterans Against the War is supporting him as part of a new campaign called Operation Recovery. IVAW.org is their website. They're asking the military and the White House to stop deploying soldiers that have been wounded and pushed beyond the limits of humanity. On November 6th, Admiral Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, told NPR's Scott Simon that the military doesn't understand the problem of suicide, and not much is known about it. They're engaged in a long-term study.
There's not a lot of great literature on this, and we've put in place a very comprehensive study over the course of 5 years. We're about a year into it, to really try to pull this apart. We've also taken steps immediately to have leaders intervene, to train our people, to review every single case to try to understand this. And yet there's still a great deal that we don't understand.
Our guest called on the president and the military to immediately visit clinics where soldiers and veterans are being treated, and simply ask them what they need. Jeff Hanks, welcome.
Thank you.
I know you've served in the military, and that's a big part of your life at this moment. But who's Jeff Hanks, the guy?
I'm a father. That's actually more important to me than anything. I have two little girls. Like you said, I'm in the military. I'm a sports fanatic. any kind of sports I love, but more than anything, you know, I just love being a dad. And I did love my job in the military, and I love being a husband as well. I'm basically a big family type of guy.
And you enlisted in the military when?
I enlisted active duty in April 2008.
And then you went to Iraq first?
Yes, ma'am. I was deployed to Iraq in June of 2008. My unit was already there, so I linked up with them in Iraq, Balad, Iraq, to be exact. At FOB Palawada, that was the base we were at. And I was there from June of 2008 to November of 2008.
Now, the U.S. military has been dealing with losses of many kinds. You know, loss of some contiguous kind of mission, loss of the status of the military given the incredible errors. And so the military is struggling for identity. But also, there have been serious losses in terms of casualties and wounded that we both obviously know about.
Yes.
Do you think that the general American public really understands what you're going through and the size of this problem?
I believe that some do. I don't think they know the size of it, because I believe the size is much larger than, you know, anyone can imagine. I was telling people, you know, I've been on two deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan. Afghanistan is my current deployment. I've been there 6 months. There's a lot of people dealing with a lot of different stresses. I mean, I've been on two deployments. I haven't seen as much as, you know, somebody's been on four. But what I have seen has been brutal, and especially a couple instances in Iraq. But, you know, I think the problem, I think a lot of people don't want to hear negativity. I'm talking about the military here. You know, they don't deny you medical treatment, but resources are very limited. But when you do seek medical treatment, I'm speaking for my unit. I'm not speaking for every unit because I don't know. But you tend to be outcasted, and a lot of people just don't want to go through the ridicule and be made to think that, you know, you're crazy when you're not. You know, you're just dealing with certain problems. And you know, like mine, I've been dealing with stuff. I'm a very private person. So, you know, I didn't even seek help from the military because I didn't want to be ridiculed. You know, I was hoping to get promoted. And, you know, once you say that you need, you know, to go to mental health or anything like that, you know, there's a cloud over you then. And, you know, they may say, well, no, there's not, but there is. And you know it. I think the problem is widespread. I think that you got a lot of young kids out there, 19, 20, you know, that are dealing with problems, but they may not have the support structure that I have. I have a really strong family that will listen to me and encourage me. But they may, you know, they may have, you know, the only kind of father figure or adult figure they have is their NCO support channel, and they may think that they're all-knowing. So they may be intimidated not to say anything. They may just try to hide it. And I think that's why you got a lot of suicides. I think that's why you got a lot of DUIs. I think that's a lot of it. And I think that the American public really doesn't catch on to see, you know, how widespread it is.
Now, year after year, we do see these kind of grim statistics, both the casualty reports, the wounded, and the suicides. You know, and in fact, Admiral Mullen was on National Public Radio recently with his wife, and they were discussing this, obviously, you know, emotional. It's a difficult issue, you know, clearly even for command, right? But
yeah.
The promise to do something about it, I mean, it seems as if we're facing, you know, year after year of suicides in record numbers. Can you just address that? I mean, why do you think that that happens?
I think the suicide problem, I think that, you know, the brass can say, you know, they have good intentions. I believe they have, you know, they probably have the right intentions, but there's a culture, you know, down to the platoon level, you know, which they can't get to, really. And I think, you know, there's a culture, especially in combat units, you know, where, you know, you're a pansy if you seek help or you're trying to, you know, dodge a fight, which, you know, in most cases, I say majority of cases, that's not true. But the suicide issue, you know, they go about it the wrong way. Like, they, I mean, it's, at least they're doing something, but it's not what is working because, you know, the suicide rate is still very, very high. They, you know, will give people what they call ACE cards to carry in your left breast pocket, you know, to give to someone if you feel like they're, you know, suicidal, which a card doesn't work. I mean, really. I mean, it might, you know, but it's kind of ridiculous, you know, handing somebody a card that is borderline, you know, going to kill themselves. I think, you know, these classes that they give and stuff like that, I just don't think that works. If you're going to kill yourself, you're going to do it. And a class is not going to help. You know, I think that command needs to be more proactive in noticing things in soldiers, maybe, you know, habits, behaviors, and, you know, trying to address it then, you know, where they can get help and not feel like they have no other way out. I think a lot of these people kill themselves because they feel like they have no other option, like, you know, okay, if I go to my command, you know, saying I'm suicidal, then they're going to separate me from the rest of the guys. Everybody's going to know, even though medical information is confidential. As soon as you're separated, you know, somebody's going to know something's up. You're going to have people asking you, and, you know, especially guys that live in the barracks who can't get away from work, you know. So they need to really handle that differently as far as treating guys who are acting, you know, that way. They don't need to outcast them from the rest of the guys. That's the worst thing I could do.
We're speaking with Jeff Hanks. Jeff Hanks is, in fact, AWOL at this time. In around mid-September, he was supposed to get on a plane to go around for another tour with the 101st Airborne Division. He was trying to get help, though, at Fort Bragg and Fort Campbell, where military doctors, he hoped, would treat him for post-traumatic stress disorder. Jeff Hanks, I know that it's mentioned in the story by Sarah Lazar that you also have physical wounds. Can you just talk about what has happened to you?
I got hit in August in Afghanistan, a mortar round. The Taliban attacked us with mortars, which they often do. You know, and it gets really old, but they were hitting us. And I always get caught in the wrong places. I was actually, you know, in the bathroom. So I had to run back to try to get to my platoon for accountability and to take up battle position because the Taliban is famous for trying to overrun people. So I ran for it, and they were firing at the same time. And, you know, I was doing my, you know, 3 to 5 second rushes like we're taught, trying to, you know, take cover here and then run for it, you know. So I made it right beside our CP building, our command building, and the mortar hit the roof on the building right above me. I was right beside the building, and it blew me against the wall. I hit my lower back. It really dazed me. I don't remember getting back to my bay where my platoon was. That was like, it was usually like a 3 to 5 second, you know, walk. So I don't remember that much time. I got back, and the first thing I remember after that is putting my body armor on, getting ready to take up positions. And my medic was like, you know, are you okay? And I said, yeah, yeah. And I was so dazed. And I started getting sick to my stomach. And he said, okay, that's it. He said, we need to take him to the aid station. So they took me to the aid station. They gave me an MTBI test, a traumatic brain injury test, which I scored 21 out of 30. I failed it. So they set me down for 24 hours with a concussion. And after that, you know, I went back to the aid station. I had a severe headache afterwards and my ringing in my ears. I went back to the aid station, and for a couple days, you know, I still had headaches, but then they went away for a couple of days, and the aid station had me come back, you know, every day, and you know, I'm not going to lie, I was like, well, my headaches are gone for now, you know, and they said, okay, great, they said, you're fine. They never did a CAT scan on me, they never did an MRI, and I told them, I said, I did not hit my head, I hit my back, and I don't think they even really listened to me, you know, I understand they had a lot going on at the time, you know. I know there's probably people that are, you know, probably going a lot worse than I was. So, you know, I understand that. But, and then after a couple of days of not having any bad headaches, you know, I was back on duty. I started having headaches again pretty frequently, and a lot of tightness in my back. But they didn't do anything for me, really. They gave me, you know, Motrin. And, you know, that didn't really do anything for me. I mean, I took it, but it didn't really do anything for me. So then shortly thereafter, a couple weeks after, I came home on leave. So I've been dealing with headaches ever since, pretty frequently. When I get them, they're pretty bad. Like, I actually had one all last night, and I try to sleep it off, but I woke up this morning with it, but it finally went away.
What do you think might be going on? I know you've probably realized now that just because you don't physically hit something with your head, you know, the blast still affects you. And unfortunately, that shock from the blast can cause traumatic brain injury, even if slight. And it can, of course, be linked to those headaches that you're having. I say this because I've read basically what's happened to other soldiers. And about this, have you had any medical care at home now from any private physicians?
When I reported to Fort Bragg, so when I went to the airport in Raleigh-Durham, to get back on the plane to go back for my last part of my tour in Afghanistan. I had already done 6 months there. It was a mid-tour leave. I had my panic attack there in the airport. I already checked in my bags and everything, and I was sitting there and, you know, eating lunch with my wife before I boarded the plane, and some guy really, I still think it was so loud, he hit plates behind me, but my wife said he clapped. I don't know why he clapped, but for some reason he did, and it really freaked me out. I thought I was going to have a heart attack, and I got really short of breath, and so my wife tried to get me on the plane, but I just couldn't do it. I said, you know, something's seriously wrong. And so I went to Fort Bragg at ER. They were actually pretty helpful. They did a CAT scan. They were the first ones to do that on my head. It came up negative, which, you know, I figured that it would because I didn't hit my head. And then counselor there, the social worker, she took all my notes and stuff, and she listened to everything I said from Iraq to Afghanistan, all the stuff that I've seen, what was going on with me, and she was like, well, I can diagnose you with a panic attack that you had in the airport, but I can't treat you further because you belong to Campbell. So, you know, I went back to Campbell. I reported back to my unit. I understood that it had me on AWOL status because I did not get on the plane. I understood that. And I went back, and trying to seek help, the deal was that I would go back, you know, and I would report in, and then they would take me to the ER at Fort Campbell. They did that with military escort. I went back to the ER. A doctor there gave me Flexeril for my headaches. He was like, well, your CAT scan is negative, so I'll give you pain medication for your headaches, which actually, you know, I appreciated that because I could actually sleep then. And then the social worker there saw me, and she was like, well, I'll make an appointment for the next day, which was Thursday, October 14th, to see behavioral health. That's okay. So next morning I reported in. They took me with military escort. My wife was present for all this. Took me with military escort to behavioral health. The lady I saw there, a social worker, you know, listened to everything I said. She took all the notes, put it in the computer. And then she, at the end of it, she goes, well, I really can't help you because she said, I'm attached to 2nd Brigade, 101st, and you're a member of 1st Brigade, 101st. So I need to make you an appointment for Monday, October 18th, to see the therapist from 1st Brigade. That's okay. Went to, you know, in the waiting room and got my military escort, told him what was going on. He said, okay. And he said, well, go look for an apartment for you and your wife. So I left to go do that. And then they called me back to squadron, staff duty, where my rear D command is. And they said, did you get cleared medically today? And I said, no. I said, I haven't been, you know, I don't know what's wrong with me. I was like, they've just been taking notes. And they said, well, you need to get cleared medically today. And I said, well, I said, I have an appointment Monday morning. I said, that's the first appointment they could get me in. And they said, well, they said you need to go to behavioral health and see if they can get that done today. And they said, you need to get cleared today. And they said, because you're flying to Afghanistan tomorrow morning, which was Friday, October 13th. And like I said before, I told them when I first came back, I have no problem going back, none. But I do need some help. I knew something was wrong with me. My family had noticed it. My daughters even noticed it. And, you know, when a 5- and 3-year-old tell you, when they sit you down and tell you, then you know something's wrong. So I knew something was wrong.
Your story and the different situations that are recounted, you know, on your behalf by Sarah Lazar seem to indicate hypersensitivity. It's like your normal reactions are extreme where they used to be normal. And can you just talk about what that's like? Because I know a lot of people say that it's the kind of level of anxiety and fear that you could almost call physical. And also that, you know, the fear sometimes gets translated into anger.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon, a Veterans Voice radio show. And we're listening to Jeff Hanks talking about what happened to him when he was going to be deployed back to Afghanistan. And he didn't get the medical care. So he's going to be talking again. He's going to finish talking about how he was treated within the military. And Tammy, can you go ahead and start back up for us?
Oh, yeah. It gets old because you're always on alert. Like, I can't go to Walmart. I have a lot of problems with that, because it's always packed. And I have problems with crowds. I don't like a bunch of people being around me because I can't help it. I always do a threat assessment on people. I can't help it. Like, people walk behind me, I don't like it. And my wife made a mistake. It was not her fault, but she left me alone in electronics. And there was too many people around and too much noise. And it just drove me crazy, and I had to leave Walmart. I'm very on edge. Like, I can't walk down the sidewalk if I see a piece of trash, a bag that shouldn't be there, that looks out of place, you know, the first thing that pops in my mind is IED or something like that. It's very tiring because I really want to relax. The want to is there. I really want, but I can't. And I'm always on edge, and it's just tiring. And it really drains you. I can't. It affects you, too, like you said, physically, because I have trouble sleeping. A lot of times I don't want to sleep in the same bed as my wife because I'm afraid I'm going to have a dream that, you know, not that I mean to, that I would never do that, but in a dream that I might, you know, accidentally hit her or something, you know, without knowing, you know, because I'm asleep. But it's tiring, and then, you know, that doesn't help. It, you know, when you have two little girls, when you're that stressed and that on alert, you know, that's not good with two little girls that, you know, demand all your time, and they're so overwhelming to me. A lot of times that, you know, it does, I do have anger problems, but I actually am learning how to deal with it, because I can sense when it's coming, I can sense when I'm getting a little testy, so I'll, you know, go do something that I know will calm me down. But yeah, it's the always on alert, it gets really old. I just wish that, you know, I could, you know, I live in a small little community here. There's no threats around here, I know that, but I just can't help it. Like, I go driving down the road, and if I see something on the side of the road that's suspicious, what normally wouldn't be suspicious in White Lake, North Carolina, there's no terrorist here. I know that. But, you know, I still can't help it. I'm in that mode. And I just really would like to get out of that mode, because there's no way to live all the time.
And, Jeff, your wife is Christine, right?
Christina, yes.
So Christina's been more or less deploying with you, dealing with these near-impossible problems with you all along.
Yes.
Just talk about what it's been like for her, too.
Oh, really rough. I mean, after Iraq, you know, I saw a couple things in Iraq that really, and it had to do with little girls, that it was horrible. you know, I was dealing with, and like I said earlier, I'm a very private person, and I mean, I will tell people like who are close to me, you know, what's going on, but anybody else know. She could tell when I came home, you know, our marriage was a little rocky in Iraq. Deployments are always tough, but, you know, we reconciled, you know, we were doing a lot better when I came home, but I just found her overwhelming and my kids overwhelming. This sounds terrible, but this is my feeling at the time. I didn't care that me leaving would hurt her. I knew it did. And I was a, for lack of a better term, a douchebag, because I didn't care that, you know, how it would make my kids feel that I wasn't there. You know, I didn't care. And I just was detached from her and my kids. And I just felt like, you know, I just didn't want to be around them. You know, I came home and, you know, from Iraq, and, you know, we had a little husband and wife get together in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and it was okay. It was fun, but afterwards I was like, you know, I don't want anything to do with them anymore. And that was what I did. And it's been really tough on her because it's been a roller coaster, you know, but we reconciled in Afghanistan, you know, while I was there. And she understands, you know, because she talked to me about it. She was like, yeah, I know those changes and differences in you. And I was like, yeah, I know. And she knows how to recognize that now. And she's hanging in there with me. So I realized that, you know, before, you know, I was just really detached from them. But I'm trying not to be that way. And, you know, trying to just be, I'm a very loving person. And I wasn't that way for a long time. And I'm really trying to get back there, you know, what I was before.
Now, that challenge to get back to who you were before strikes a chord, because it's also what a lot of the soldiers that I've read their testimony, you know, have said, that they want to be the person they used to be. What if you
yeah.
can't be? You know, I mean, maybe that's why being around your family made you uncomfortable, because you didn't feel that you were up to being who you wanted to be or who you were, and that was a reminder, you know, when you were around them. Does that make sense?
Oh, definitely. And also, you know, I got sick of hearing it. Like, especially my parents. My parents will, and Christina, too, will tell it to me straight. You know, they never hold back. They're not yes people, which I like that. But I got sick of hearing, you know, that there was something wrong with me. I got sick of hearing it, especially after Iraq. You know, like, I'm a pretty social guy, but I didn't want to go and do anything. And my parents and my wife kept saying, you know, there's something wrong, you know, you've changed quite a bit. And I didn't want to hear it, and it got really old being around them, because that's all I heard, you know. And I was just like, okay, you know, I think you guys just don't understand. I thought at first, you know, I thought, well, it's my first time being in a combat area, you know, that's how you feel afterwards. But the alertness and the anger never went away, and it's still here. I mean, I got an explosive temper, and, you know, I would never, ever, ever, you know, harm my wife or my daughters. But when it comes to other people that may not normally say anything to me, like, would bother me, now it bothers me, and it really triggers me. I'll give you an example. I was visiting my parents on leave. I flew to Kansas to see them. My dad's a professor out there. Went out to see them, and we went to a Kansas City Royals baseball game, and we stopped for directions. My dad got lost to the stadium, and we found a police officer there that my dad was asking directions from, and that officer did cop an attitude. He was very rude. I mean, I would know that anyway, but my dad was handling it. But the officer smirked at my father in a way where I saw it, and it just, I was so angry when I saw that. And I really, honestly, if that police officer had not been in his squad car with the window just barely down, if he'd been outside, I would have decked him. And when that happened, I was like, wow, okay, because I had this overwhelming anger that I almost could not control. So I walked over and I started doing stretches. You know, I tried something to relax me. And my parents were like, why is he over there stretching? And I told them later, I was like, I had to walk away because, you know, I would have been in jail right now. And that kind of worried them. And, you know, it makes you uncomfortable because you don't want your family to think that you're a psycho, you know, and they don't. But, you know, you don't want to give that impression where they walk on eggshells around you. So that gets really, you know, where you just don't want to be around them sometimes.
Well, Jeff, I want to say that you may not be normal now for you. You may not be the Jeff Hanks you grew up with and knew, right? You've changed.
Oh, yes.
But your circumstances that you're describing are described over and over again by hundreds of soldiers that have been through similar, if not identical, situations. And so, knowing that, If you could speak directly to Admiral Mullen and President Obama, who has two daughters of his own, what would you ask of them?
I want them to, I understand that they see it as a problem. At least they're talking about it, which is always good to bring it up. I don't think they even know how widespread the problem is because, you know, like President Obama, I mean, when you're that high up of power, you're kind of shielded. You are, and you don't get down with the private first classes and the specialists, the young E5s that a lot of these people are dealing with. These people are dealing with the problems of all ranks, but especially I know it's young guys. I think, I'm not sure the statistics here, but I know it's usually like 20 to 24 of people with suicide rates. I would ask them to, instead of, you know, relying on your staff to tell you what's going on, get the knowledge firsthand. I know it's, you know, outside the chain of command, but go to these places, go to mental health clinics, talk to soldiers firsthand who are dealing with this kind of stuff, and you're going to need to change the culture. I know it's really hard to do, but there's a, you know, macho, you know, if you seek help, you're a pansy culture, which has got to change because that is why you have so many problems with people who don't think they can go out for help. They're going to need to get down with the lower ranks and, you know, talk to them personally because that's the only way they're going to know, you know, what kind of widespread. I don't think they really realize. I mean, they can say they do, but I don't think they realize, you know, how many people are affected and how many people who don't go for help are either self-medicating or drinking it off. And, you know, there's a lot of people in denial. So they say the right things, but it's like it's not getting across. And I think they need to be a little more proactive and hands-on with it.
According to a report in truthout.org by Sarah Lazier, Jeff Hanks' problem could be the result of existing DOD policy. She writes that the U.S. Department of Defense actually directs commanding officers to waive medical evaluations and order service members into combat.
That's the rules according to what we read in the military's own text. I think it's a really horrendous practice. I think that it leads to all sorts of abuse of our service members. And it's also fundamentally unsafe for people in Iraq and Afghanistan because, you know, an occupying presence that is traumatized and that is not mentally well is going to be more dangerous for the civilian population. I think it's widely acknowledged now that suicides and post-traumatic stress disorder and combat stress, as well as military sexual trauma, rape from within the command, rape and sexual assault, are widespread problems. And we've all been reading in the news that suicides are skyrocketing and even top military brass is alarmed. Iraq Veterans Against the War has a campaign called the Operation Recovery Campaign, which is aimed at stopping the redeployment of traumatized troops. This campaign is built around the understanding that the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan could not continue if it weren't for the traumatization and re-traumatization and redeployment of wounded soldiers. And so Iraq Veterans Against the War, as well as their civilian allies, are working to end this cruel and inhumane practice, both to stop a practice that's unfair and unjust, and also to withdraw consent from wars that are traumatizing everyone involved. The campaign Operation Recovery was launched October 7th of this year. It's led by Iraq Veterans Against the War in alliance with several organizations. Some of that campaign is aiming to stop the redeployment of traumatized troops, and folks in the Operation Recovery campaign will support anyone who refuses deployment because they can't survive another deployment or they're not well enough to deploy. And Iraq Veterans Against the War is an organization comprised of around 2,000 service members who have served since September 11, 2001. And IVAW calls for immediate withdrawal from Iraq and Afghanistan, reparations for the people of both countries, and full benefits for returning veterans, including mental health benefits. And the organization also stands in open support of GI resistance. And I'm a member of the Civilian Soldier Alliance, which is a group of civilian allies that work in collaboration with Iraq Veterans Against the War to support veterans while organizing against the war, as well as GIs organizing against the war and organizing for their rights. And another group that's really stepped up to help out and support Jeff Hanks is Courage to Resist. So Courage to Resist is an organization that supports troops who refuse to fight in Iraq and Afghanistan.
You can read the story by Sarah Lazier in truthout.org about Jeff Hanks. Again, the GI Rights hotline number is 877 447 4487. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program is produced in Storrs, Connecticut, and syndicated nationally with Pacifica Network. TalkNationRadio.org for audio and transcripts. Our music is by Fritz Heed.
Great. That you're listening to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland. And they were just heard an interview with Jeff Hanks, who is a Gulf War veteran. He'd been in Iraq, and then he was deployed to Afghanistan. And he was talking about his medical problems he was having and the trouble he was having trying to get care for it. I deal with Gulf War veterans from the Iraq and Afghanistan almost every day. I get phone calls almost every day. And everything that this young man was talking about is what I hear every day about not being able to get the help they need, being redeployed, on the list to be deployed, active duty guys, men and women, and also the National Guard being redeployed and redeployed and redeployed. They're having this really hard time. And to keep these two wars going, there's going to be more and more suicides. There's going to be more and more desertions and AWOL. And it's just going to tear these people apart. Of the 142 people that have connections to Oregon and southern Washington that were killed are three women. Three women were killed. And you heard the woman from Iraqi Veterans Against the War talking about the sexual assaults that they have to deal with in the military. I hear that, too, from some of the phone calls that I get. I know a woman who was in an active duty and then in the National Guard, and she was talking about how she was sexually harassed and attacked by folks when she was in Iraq. So this whole problem is just going to get worse and worse and worse. If you want to find out, if you're an Iraqi veteran and you want to join IVAW, you can go on their web. There's a chapter here in Portland, but you could, to get a hold of them, I didn't bring their phone number, I'm sorry. But you can go on the internet, and you can go to IVAW.org, and there'll be a section, and they'll have where all the chapters are. And they're really doing great work. Out in Washington County, I deal with Washington County and a lot of you know, other counties over in that area, and I'm seeing more and more of people calling and starting to talk about what's happening to them that don't want to get involved with the VA. They've only been out of the military for a while, or they're still in the military. The women do not want to be involved in this stuff at all. Like I was saying, if you're a female veteran, is three times more likely to commit suicide than a female who has no military service. And like I said before, that they use guns. They use guns. This one woman that I'm talking to now, she is so suicidal. She was so suicidal. And I talked to her and I talked to her and I talked to her. And I finally got her to go up to the VA. And she went to the VA and they took her right in. And she's doing okay now. We call it the flight deck. It's the mental ward up on the VA. And she spent time up there and now she's out. But she's doing a lot better. But she's going to have to go through a lot of counseling for this. Our brothers are the same way. They're going to have to go through lots of counseling. These guys out there in that area do not want to be part of an organization. They do not want to be told what to do. They want to just have their families. They're having trouble. They're having divorces. They're having alcohol and drug problems. These guys haven't been back that long. So if they're having this much trouble now, what's going to happen as time goes by, Bill? It's just going to get worse for these guys. Listen to me, you guys, you men and women. go get help. Go get help, because there's help out there.
Yeah, the effect that it has on your families, on your children and your wives and your parents, if you will, and just your family. I don't think that the general public is aware of it. Just think of that. What was that, 140-some people?
Oregonians.
Oregonians.
142.
Yeah, think of those families and think of the breakup and the injury to the family members.
I got a phone call probably a week or 2 weeks ago. It was from this young kid. He had been active duty. He had been in Iraq, and he got stop loss. Then he went back to Iraq on a deployment, and then he came back home, and then he got sent to Afghanistan. This kid, he got wounded in Afghanistan. He came back home, got out of the military, and joined the National Guard. And guess what? He's getting deployed.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, he's getting deployed. He got divorced. His family, he has two little kids. So there's this real problem. If you're going to really try to end these wars, I mean, there's January 14th with Dan Handelman and the folks from Peace and Justice at Work, the Iraqi Affinity Group, go down there and have a big sign, man. You know, go down there and have this big sign that says stop military and veteran suicides, you know. In the time, in this, I was reading this article, and the time some Oregonians were killed in Afghanistan, that three times that many Oregon veterans had killed themselves, Iraqi veterans, but veterans of World War II and Vietnam and Korea. So these wars going on now affect us, guys. It's affecting us, and it's affecting our families.
That's something that the public just doesn't seem to take into consideration, or maybe they do, and I just don't realize it. But the burden that supporting these horrible wars on these poor people that happen to be born in a foreign country is unfathomable. You just don't know the suffering of the families economically and physically, it's been going on as long as I'm 82 years old now, one war after another after another after another, it turns the nation into something that it shouldn't be. We should be devoting our resources and our all of our resources to the infrastructure and to providing adequately for our residents or for our citizens, you know, with health care and with old age care and children care. We just have to really take another look at what our role as human beings is.
Yeah. As you're listening to this, it's important to remember that a couple of things. We're Veterans Voice, we're veterans, and we care. And we care about you, and we care about your family. And there's a lot of other people out there that care. There's a lot of difference between supporting a particular war effort and supporting the troops who actually fight the war. And we're opposed to the war, but we're going to do everything we can for the troops that had to fight the war. And when you go to a place like the Vet Center, if you're here in the Portland metro area, I encourage you to just stop by and visit it.
Yeah.
Whether you're family, whether you're anything, they have, in my personal opinion, an incredible ability to make you feel comfortable, to make you feel that
they're not judgmental.
Absolutely
out there.
Not
if you
judgmental,
go out there,
and they understand. They have you have people that have been there before. Whether you're family, whether you're a veteran, you're not alone. And there's a lot of other people that have gone through it, and it's difficult to make it through, but some of us have made it through. We want you to make it through.
Yeah, we
also
do. And one thing that with the vet center out on 8383 Northeast Sandy Boulevard, that those vet centers were started by Vietnam vets. Those vet centers were started by veterans to help other Vietnam veterans. And they've gotten better over the years, and they're getting a lot better. And also, if you live in the Bend area, you can go call the Central Oregon Veterans Outreach, and they'll help you. And you can call the Veterans Suicide Hotline, which is 1-800-273-8255. Bill has something he wants to read here before we close here in just a few
minutes.
Let me
say just one other thing, Marvin, and that is the fact that even if you don't feel like you're at a point of suicide, if you're feeling anything, go ahead and do the stuff ahead of time, because you don't want to wait till you get to the point where all of you sudden lose it. As Tom said, he thinks he can control his anger with his family, but don't take any chances on things like that. Go ahead and meet some of the other vets and be prepared in advance.
Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
Yes, you've been listening to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO Portland, Oregon. Our guest today was a Talk Nation radio interview with Jeff Hanks. Our program is on the third Friday of every month at 9 a.m. We'll be back next month on Friday, January 21st. And if you want to hear any of our past shows, go to our webpage at kboo.fm/veteransvoice. Now, please stay tuned for Air Cascadia.
I'm going to give you the phone numbers one more time for Returning Veterans Project, and that's 503-933-4996. That is, those folks will help the families, the veterans, the active duty folks, and they won't ask you any questions. So, Tammy, we'll be back next month, and thanks a lot. And welcome home, Tammy.
Welcome home, and a wonderful job.
Thanks, you guys.
Yeah. We missed you.